A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. Tim here in the rugby dungeon, alone. JB's on holiday. So is Phil. Phil's in France. JB's in Gran Canaria. How you doing? You're right. Okay. Fortunately, the wonders of modern technology mean that, well, no, I can't get in touch with Phil. He is in a very rural part of France at a wedding. JB, however, is shunning his family to make sure he is still with you for this Egg Chasers rugby podcast. So, buenos dias, Mr. Beardmore.
Buenos dias, Tim Cocker. How are you, mate?
Very well. Set the scene. Where are you? What's around you? What's going on?
I'm in the land, right, that time forgot. So here in Puerto Rico, which is based on the lovely island of Gran Canaria, you can go to any bar here, and you're guaranteed to get at least three types of disgusting gassy lager. There is not an IPA in sight for love nor money. The steaks here are served mandatory, it would seem, with three sauces, which are also left over from the 80s. It's pretty much exactly as you would expect a Spanish resort to be from the 80s.
But it's hot and sunny.
It is hot and it is sunny and everyone's lovely. And you know what? England had another wonderful result this weekend. Yeah, I say wonderful. I mean, you know, wonderful for me.
I'm delighted that I am separated from you by several thousand miles doing this podcast. It's going to make it a little bit more bearable. So, yeah, on this podcast, obviously, we're going to talk about Downfall 2018 continuing. We're going to talk about New Zealand, France, Wales and a quality tour of Argentina. But I think I just want to start with the most impressive result of the weekend by the USA. The sleeping giant has stirred.
So I got a text last night from our dear friend on the American Rugby podcast, Warren Mullis, who at about 20 past 11 last night texted me and said, put it on your board. This will be USA's first win over a tier one nation. And lo and behold, he was right. And you know who played very, very well?
AJ McGinty.
Our boy AJ McGinty, who had an absolute stormer, apparently.
He did. He organised the team, managed the game, absolutely brilliant, like a class international 10. And another player who we've seen in England. You don't see him a lot, but I can't pronounce it right. The hooker from Worcester.
Oh, you're from Worcester, yeah?
Absolutely immense. Beast of a player. Yeah, two tries and he...
Very, very strong boy, isn't he?
Really strong boy. It was 30 degrees, 70% humidity. The game was played at 9 p.m. in the evening, that was the conditions at 9 p.m. in the evening. But Scotland got themselves into an amazing lead, three tries to nil up, and the USA managed to claw back that lead. Such an amazing result for them. It's scary for the rest of the world if USA managed to use this as a springboard.
Well, they've got a good coach involved now, haven't they, in Gary Gold, who's very, very pragmatic. You know, he'll take what he's got there and he'll fashion them into a decent international side, and that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, well, let's contrast that. I suppose for Scotland, I mean, there were some Scottish fans who were a bit dismayed that we gave only a very cursory mention to Scotland last week against Canada, and now we're only mentioning them because the USA have won.
Well, I mean, it's only right that we that we write that wrong, actually, Tim. Let's talk about them a lot then today.
Yeah, I think they'll remind
us. That's what they can have.
Well, the Scottish team was a lot of younger players and fringe players, but nonetheless, there were some of their big name, plenty, in fact, of their big names in there, and they would have expected to have won this. So it's very, very Scottish. I never want Scotland to change. Sublime to ridiculous in just a matter of a few games.
Yeah, well, they used to go from sublime to ridiculous, didn't they, in the course of about 10 years. They spent a long time being ridiculous before they got very good. And it seems that they're just doing that cycle again, but in a lot shorter spurts, which is good to see.
let's jump to, you talked about Gary Gold, pragmatic, solid coaching, doing the simple things well. And let's move to Eddie Jones, who seems to be making something which could be relatively simple look really, really complicated.
Oh, mate, this is so... I mean, it's tragic now, isn't it? You can kind of see the infestation of how that team works, the culture behind it. I tell you what was so telling of the whole debacle was the way that Ben Youngs reacted after the game. I mean, that to me tells you how they are as a group, how they think it's acceptable to behave. I know he's come off a bad loss, but, you know, it's not a good place that they find themselves in.
Completely agree. And I can say, as someone who, works on the Aviva Premiership and is in the position of thrusting a microphone in front of players' faces before, during and after games, and Ben Youngs is always one of the first people to volunteer himself for that role before a game, and is always an absolute true pro and a gent and very giving of his time. So it was so out of character. But I think, as you say, it highlights a tension inside that squad. Also backed up by the fact that Joe Marler and Mike Brown apparently got into a little bit of a verbal altercation with some fans as well after the game, apparently.
Yeah, I've heard this. And do you know what? I've actually seen this in real life. Not Joe Marler, I might add. But I've seen Dan Cole kick off with fans before. It was Dan Cole, it's someone else at Sale. And watching it from where I was literally about 10 yards away from Dan Cole and I can't remember the other player. And I actually thought, you know, being a player, I know you've got to be extremely professional and all the rest of it, but fans can get to you occasionally. And, you know, I actually saw this and I was on the side of the players. Like, you can get so much abuse because you're so in the spotlight. And I think sometimes fans just don't appreciate that, you know, although these are massive blokes, they are just blokes. And the things that you continue to shout at them do affect them. And I'm going to give them a pass on this because I know the sort of pressure that they must be under.
Yeah, and I'm also giving Ben Youngs a pass. Because, like I say, his form is so uncharacteristic. And he came out and sort of apologised and said, you know, that wasn't right. But Eddie Jones as well was very bullish once again in his post-match interviews.
Did you hear the Chris Jones interview?
Yeah.
Fair play, Chris Jones. He held it together rather well. He sounded like he was rushing a bit towards the end, but he asked some cracking questions.
Well, I think it's when you just get... And I've had this a few times with Steve Diamond, funnily enough. When you get like one word answers, it's actually really difficult to keep chucking question after question after question when all they're answering is, no, don't think so, I don't agree. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but these wouldn't... Yeah, I mean, that is a very Steve Diamond thing, isn't it? Yeah, yo, yeah, we're good. No, we're bad. Yeah, you can see that. But Eddie Jones was far more... He wanted to talk, but didn't really want to give the answer. I thought it's very telling when he asked Chris Jones why he was being so aggressive.
Yeah.
Because Eddie, I think he said this to us, actually. I can't remember if it was another interview or if it was us in World Player of the Year. No, it was definitely someone else. He said that there is a thing in England, right, where we don't deal with confrontation too well. And because we don't deal with confrontation too well, we call it calling people out, like you've called this guy out, you've called that guy out. And his view on it is no, you're just being honest with people continually. So I found it fascinating that he would say to Chris Jones, why are you being so aggressive? Because apparently that's what he's all for.
it was fractious and uncomfortable, yes, and a bit awkward. And
I am
odd.
Telling you right now that he is one argument away from walking away. I think he is literally just one little hoo-ha from, I don't know, just name a Premiership owner, and he is gone. He's going to walk. I guarantee it.
There's lots of people, Lawrence Dallaglio today read a good article saying there's a lot of things going wrong, there's a lot of things need to be fixed, but this isn't the time to hit the panic button. This is salvageable. It can turn it around with some relatively simple factors. But what struck me about the game is how so many simple things were made to look so hard.
Give me an example. So I've only seen the extended highlights, so you've got a better impression of what's been going on.
So last week's penalty count was between 12 and 14. I can't remember which. I think it was 14 again yesterday, and the turnover count was 15 last week and was 18.
Wow.
In the second test. 18 turnovers and 14 penalties.
Yeah, I mean, that shows you, doesn't it, the value of a guy like James Haskell to look after your own ball. I mean, looking after your own ball is so underrated. Everyone's looking for sevens to go and steal other ball. But just keeping your own, you know, you solve a lot of problems.
I can see that, but equally, do you know one person I think England really, really miss? Dylan Hartley. I never thought I would say that. But
in what respect?
Well, I don't think Jamie George has taken his opportunity in terms of playing, particularly since Dylan Hartley's been out with concussion. But England just look a little bit rudderless in terms of leadership. And the perfect example of that was just before halftime, England had a penalty and they could have gone in to halftime ahead. And it was kickable. And Owen Farrell opted to kick it into touch. They didn't get the pushover try. Their maul just doesn't look like a weapon at all at the minute. Straight after halftime, or it might have even been before halftime, I think, or was it straight after halftime? One or the other. And South Africa got a penalty. Khaleesi pointed straight for the posts, and I think Dylan Hartley would have pointed for the posts and extended South Africa's lead. And I just think in a test match, England didn't score a point after, 17, 18 minutes? They didn't score any more points. And just when you've got 3 points on offer in a tight test match just before half-time, what international captain does not take 3 points?
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree with you here. I'm not sure if it's a leadership problem. I think there's plenty of leaders. So you say that they missed Dylan Hartley. I would counter that with saying the Saracens missed Dylan Hartley. I mean, there's a core of the team there. They've got Owen Farrell, who has captained Saracens in the past. Granted, they might be missing someone like Brad Barrett. But it's not. So, is it a lack of individual leadership? Or is it a lack of team focus and the team knowing what they're going to do in that situation rather than down to the individual decision-making?
Well, perhaps you have a point, but the cauldron of Test rugby is a really tough one. I mean, that said, Sia Khaleesi's only in his second Test matches as an international captain.
Exactly. And not doing too bad either.
No, this is true. And the situation... Well, the one I just want to pick up on one thing Eddie Jones said in his post-match interview. He made the point several times, I think both on television and on the radio interviews, saying how, we know this was going to be hard. We've got 25 players unavailable. We knew it was going to be hard. We've got 25 players at home. So it felt like an excuse. And I was scratching my head trying
Absolutely
to think of
it did.
25 players.
Yeah, I would think... I mean, they might not be available. I mean, they might count someone like... I'm just trying to think now. I mean, they might count Carl Ferns as not available. Do you know what I mean? Like, who are the players that aren't available? Would they be starting, or have they been in camp recently? You know, are we talking about players like Benno Abano, or are we talking players like Dan Cole?
Well, I wrote that down. So I've got here who I think are unavailable because of injury, or they just can't play and would have been starting, or could be in the matchday squad. And I've got Dylan Hartley, Courtney Laws, possibly Jonathan Joseph, Ben Teo, Jack Knoll, George Cruz, Sam Underhill, Anthony Watson.
Yep.
So 25 is a stupid number because he decided to leave Danny Kerr, Dan Cole, James Haskell at home, resting, quote-unquote.
Oh, I don't think there's 25 on a touring party, is there?
30... 31 or 32 maybe, but there's one, so, two, three, four, five, six. So there's seven or eight players that I reckon could start, could be starters, have a good shout at starting a test match for England. So maybe he has got a small point, but I don't like it being used as an excuse.
I completely agree. I mean, there simply is no excuse. You've gone for a test match and that's it. And you've taken the squad that you decided to take because you think it's strong enough. I mean, that's the only reason that you would take it. Now, did Brad Shields have a good game or not?
He did okay. Without being spectacular, he butchered a try. A critical moment in the game, he butchered a try.
Not seen the whole game, but reading through, it looks like he was semi-effective. He apparently had the most metres, or joint most metres, of any England forward carrying. But he only made five tackles all game, and he might have missed one, which is pretty poor for a back row.
Yeah, he was being used in a wide channel quite a lot. And do you know what? I was watching it, and Brad Shields found him has been deployed in kind of a wide position to, you know, get some ball carrying in wide positions, which is exactly what Don Armand does for Exeter Chiefs incredibly well.
I was thinking that. So, like, Brad Shields doesn't have to carry in heavy traffic, but Don Armand does.
Yeah.
What makes no sense at all.
Well, I'll tell you what makes no sense at all. Okay, when Nathan Hughes looks really unfit, and he gave away an absolutely brain-dead yellow card towards the end of the game. You have Billy Vunipola now out of the third test. He's fractured his arm.
Has he? Same arm?
I don't know if it's the same arm, but it's getting to be like death taxes and Billy Vunipola getting injured soon after returning from an injury. I hope he's not the new Manu.
Well, you can't do anything about breaks. I mean, that's just... Something that happens.
And at least he can run with this one, so his fitness shouldn't be affected as he's training to get over it. But he's out of the third test. So England's back row is looking really thin on the ground. And who did Eddie Jones decide to take on tour? Ben Earl.
Ben
Great.
Earl.
The answer to all
Good
our
one,
players.
Eddie. Nice. So before we write him off, I mean, he could come on and have a stormer.
Yeah, he could. But the point is, he's not even he doesn't even start for Saracens. And he's on
yeah, but you've got to remember, Tim, they've left 25 number eights at home.
Well, this is true. But imagine what are you thinking if you're at home watching this? Like, if you're Don Armand...
What are fans thinking, or what am I thinking?
What is James Haskell and Don Armand thinking as they watch the game?
No, they're furious.
Yeah.
They're absolutely furious. Their trust in Eddie Jones and the whole process has been absolutely shredded. So it was probably a lot of the trust within the squad itself. But as for your original question, what was I thinking, Tim?
Yeah.
I was thinking, I told you so.
I know that's what you were thinking. I didn't need to ask that.
Yeah, just in case you're wondering.
Mako Vunipola has gone home as well. That was apparently a pre-arranged thing. Some places described it as personal reasons. I think it may have been agreed before the tour just because he was knackered.
I mean... I'm sure we would have heard about this if it was agreed before the tour, or better still, he just wouldn't have gone. So I don't believe that for a second. So do you think anyone in this England team has come out with a better reputation than what they started with?
Johnny May.
That's exactly who I thought. He's had a brilliant tour.
And possibly Mike Brown.
Every inch the international winger.
Compared to where his stock was post Six Nations, then possibly Mike Brown as well.
Hmm. You know what, Mike Brown for me has been very Mike Brownish. And what I mean by that is, like, you can't fault the guy's efforts, can you? So, you know, you can slate Eddie Jones for a lot of things. I don't think Mike Brown should have played on the wing, but it is where it is. And you just got to have enormous respect for the guy for just getting on with it. He isn't the best winger. He does get done on the outside. He doesn't have the pace, but my God, he has so much heart. I mean, not that anyone needs to be told that about Mike Brown, but that's, you know, that's Mike Brown through and through.
This is true. The world rankings now are New Zealand 1, Ireland 2, as they were. Wales 3.
Yep.
Australia 4. South Africa 5. England 6.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a pretty rapid fall. Just one other thing.
Downfall, you could describe it as.
Well, yes. I mean, some people have referred to it like that in the press, or podcasts. one last thing for you. Owen Farrell played very well, I thought. And, most importantly, he seems to have sorted out some of his tackling issues to a certain degree. He made 14 tackles yesterday and only missed two, which is by far his best performance in the England 12 shirt. By far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Owen Farrell has been particularly playing poorly. Oh, I don't bloody know. I'm finding this really, really hard. It's hurting big time, I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing which is pretty hurtful. Whereas Owen Farrell seems to have sorted out his defensive frailties, and it could just be where South Africa attacked, or could just be something, you know, much specific which helped him with his tackle counts. Poor old Henry Slade missed more tackles than he made. I think he missed five, made four. Not acceptable. Might even be worse than that. It might have been five and two. Missed five, made two. It was a very, very poor tackle count.
Well, South Africa have clearly gone, we can take England if we just play an expansive game. And I think that's going to be a challenge for England, isn't it? Because everyone can see now, it's happened in the Six Nations, it's happened now. You go wide with England and they really struggle. You play really fast against England and they really struggle. I don't know what to do.
I mean, this is so annoying. It's so annoying, isn't it? Because, you know, the secret to playing fast is to obviously get nice, clean ball, get over the game. I mean, you've got to have your building blocks in place before you can go wide. You've got to get over the game line. You've got to secure your ball, and then you can play wide. So if England can stop that, and there's no reason that they can't, because the players England have got are magnificent. I mean, they're probably the best group of players in the world, or if not, they are equal to many other squads. And just with a bit of coaching and a bit of nous, they should be number two or three in the world. It's a ridiculous situation that England is sixth in the world. It's ludicrous. That alone, Eddie needs to go. He needs to either walk away or he needs to be fired. It's done. It's over.
Well, do you know what? I think that the way to do it, we could see a few weeks ago with the Barbarians. Just, exactly, you've got the raw materials. Just get them loving playing rugby again.
Do you mean, I can't think of a concise phrase for it, but do you mean something like, let the boys play?
Yeah, to avoid downfall 2018, to avoid downfall, let the boys play.
Yes, I quite agree. I couldn't agree more, actually.
Do you know what I reckon? I reckon Eddie isn't interested in Rugby World Cups. He loves records. So he got the most wins record, and then he thought, I want to flip, and I want to go for the most number of straight defeats in a row by a tier one team this year.
Yeah, the most rapid descent not by a paratrooper.
So loads of people have been piping up and saying different things. Sir Ian McGeachan saying, and he knows a thing or two about preparing teams to play in South Africa. He said that altitude is 100% a factor and that it was a total own goal not to bear that in mind and to train at sea level.
I don't know. I mean, look, of all the things he's got wrong, and he's got wrong many, many things has already, but one thing I'm not going to knock him on is the sports science side, because he's a rugby coach. Other people do the sports science. If they say go to altitude, you go to altitude. If they say go to the coast, you go to the coast. And I just don't think there's anything in that. I mean, if he'd have won, we wouldn't have mentioned it. And also, the other thing as well is I don't want it to act as some sort of smokescreen for what's really wrong. I mean, if they come away from this tour, I think, do you know what really was the problem? It wasn't Mike Brown on the wing. It wasn't the fact that we've destroyed team morale using Brad Shields. It's not the fact that we've got a whole backline of players out of position or utility players. It wasn't any of that. It's that we trained at sea level and we played at altitude. If that is their takeaway, that is the worst possible scenario for all England fans. Because they're just going to keep on doing the same stupid stuff and carry on getting humiliated. You've got to remember, the next game is South Africa. And the game after that is South Africa. So the same things will just continue to happen.
I think it is simple. And I don't necessarily think it's any of the things you just highlighted. I think it's Eddie Jones's intensity. And there's all sorts of stories coming out about just the meticulousness of his approach is just sounds suffocating. He tries to leave no stone unturned, but in doing so he makes what is actually simple. You've seen Eddie Jones make that look unbelievably complicated and stressful and overbearing.
I do wonder if Eddie Jones is do you know what, in the way that Stuart Lancaster's perfect position is probably like school coach or, you know, an actual rugby coach. Now, this isn't saying he's not a good rugby coach and blah, blah, blah. It means that Stuart Lancaster's primary position is the development of individuals as a coach. It's not a game manager. It's not a selector. It's none of these things. It's a coach. I wonder if Eddie Jones's perfect role is like a scrum coach or a defence coach, but somebody else above him has to rein him in, say, look, you're just too much of a dick, or you're just too much of a... You know,
or only gives him... I mean, yeah, because only gives him... You've got an hour today and an hour tomorrow to work on your area, whereas he has total free rein to not just think about it 24-7, but when he wants to, whenever he wants to, act on it. In terms of changes for the... Well, no, we're gonna catch up with Phil later this week, aren't we? So we'll leave a kind of preview.
Well, you might be catching up with Phil. Yes.
Yes, I'll be catching up with Phil. You'll be having a holiday. It's worth reminding everyone, yeah, actually, we're still getting a podcast out there.
I missed one in 4.5 years, it occurred to me the other day.
One podcast in 4.5 years.
That's on honeymoon. And do you know what? I regret it to this day.
What are your wife and child doing right now? What are you abandoning them from?
Got no idea. I'm down having a beer. I guess they're watching Peppa Pig or something. I've no idea.
Right, well, I'm hoping that England can turn it round and get good by the World Cup, or I refuse to do a rugby podcast and we'll be doing a darts podcast or something, or just expanding our Love Island podcast as featured in The Observer.
I guess that happened.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, let's talk about France, New Zealand, because yes. I think this is quite something which went on yesterday morning.
Yes,
and something which I will be forgetting for a while.
Go ahead then, take the floor, JB. I presume you're talking about the red card incident. Benjamin Favre.
Yeah, the red card. Okay, so two things happen when France play, okay? And two things happened yesterday, more to the point. So Benjamin Favre's red card is 100% a red card. There is no two ways about it. He was in a position to catch the ball, but he didn't catch the ball, and another lad ended up on his head. Red card, fine. The problem is, not that the laws were... applied incorrectly.
That is what a lot of people are saying, by the way. I agree with you. I actually agree with you. And a lot of people might be surprised to hear me saying it was a red card, given how many times I've said I don't think it should be a red card. But I agree the laws were applied correctly.
It shouldn't be a red card.
Yes. No, absolutely not.
And I just thought, you know, I'm just deflated now. I was so looking forward to this game. I got up nice and early. Made myself some croissants and coffee. And before you know it, Benjamin Fowles off, and I'm thinking, well, what's the point now? What's the point? And who is this appealing to? I mean, all the fans were booing. The New Zealand fans were booing as Benjamin Fowles walked off. It's just pathetic. And people will go on about player safety. Now, a guy who tweets us regularly said something along the lines like, he's lucky not to be paralysed. And it turns out he didn't mean exactly that. But the point being is, there's so much hysteria about landing on your neck or your head. And I can't think of a single example of, you know, someone being severely injured doing this, particularly in the pro game. And then other people will then pipe up and say, well, you know, it's to spread the game far and wide. But the answer is, no, it's not. you know, the beauty of rugby lies in its physicality and the fact you can challenge for a ball in the air. They are ruining the game. And for what? To appeal to people that don't watch it anyway. Really upset me, this one. Really upset me. But it is a red. Angus Gardner had a good game. And I'll tell you something else as well, Tim. I won't go on too much longer. But I think part of this red had to do with Luke Pearce last week. Luke Pearce made the decision, in my mind, that he was going to ref the game as he saw it, as quickly as he can, rely on his own instincts, and literally just do not go up to the TMO unless absolutely necessary. Sadly for Luke Pearce, someone got their head caved in. This week, I think Angus Gardner was taking no chances, was going to apply the letter of the law, because the last thing he wants is the same thing that's happened to him as that happened to Luke Pearce post the first test.
I don't disagree with that. And do you know what? The phrase you just used, as we have said, that phrase letter of the law, which is something a lot of fans have used, outrage, red card, letter of the law. That's what they asked for. And what they got yesterday was what we warned the consequence would be. You ask for the letter of the law, you start baying for blood every time there's a physical incident, then this is what you will get. You will get games of rugby ruined because the letter of the law has been applied. I don't know what, if anything, can be done.
Now, I'm not against letter of the law refereeing. I just believe the letters are wrong. You know, so there needs to be a change. This can't go on. And it has a strategic impact on the game. So coaches now are going to be looking at players and they're going to go, right, when there's a high ball, don't watch the ball, watch the player, let him land, hit it. Well, that's fine, right? That's absolutely fine. But then other coaches are going to be looking at it and saying, well, if we have the ball and we kick it up, there's going to be such a risk to the opposition to challenge us that it's kind of a no-brainer. We'll put it up and we'll try and draw the yellow card. And if we don't draw the yellow card, we'll catch it with great field position away from their pack. And the packers have to run from one side of the field to the other side of the field. And you know, they've, without realizing it, given teams like New Zealand a massively effective attacking weapon. And I'm not entirely sure how you go about countering it.
Well, one of the suggestions from Steve Hansen, who I want to be fair to Steve Hansen, because last week he said, the French coach last week, Jacques Brunel, said he thought it was an accident when Rémy Grosso got his skull caved in a little bit. Jacques Brunel, the French coach, said accident, not a red card. Steve Hansen, the New Zealand coach, said, I thought it was an accident, not a red card. That's what the citing commissioner has always also said. Now, but when the boot was on the other foot, Steve Hansen came out straight after the game and said, that's not a red card and we need to do something about this. I think it should go to a rugby league report style so you're not ruining games.
Yeah, I don't think this orange card is a goer. I don't think any of it, report style is fine. People were saying that Benjamin Fowle wasn't in a position to catch the ball, which I think is bizarre.
He was in the air.
Fowle just stays still. He catches the ball. So now it's a case of who's going to jump higher. I mean, you're just ruining the... You're basically making a bunch of new... You know, there's a bunch of consequences involved in this lawmaking which people don't really think about. And, they need to wind it in a bit. And I think they have to a degree, but, you know, we still get stupid outcomes like this.
And as a result, we don't really need to talk about the game a great deal. New Zealand were below par. France actually played pretty well and I think showed they got something about them.
Oh, hear me now, believe me later, Tim. When I get back, I'm going to write this on the board. France are going to win next year's Six Nations. I think they'll get a Grand Slam.
Wow.
There you go. Heard it here first.
That is going on the board.
Class outfit, mate. They are so powerful and they are so quick. And people that think that they're not watching the same thing. They've been unlucky against New Zealand. Obviously, they got panned first game, but they've got some of their players back. 14 guys that kept it very, 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 very tight, all things considering. But it's their Six Nations performances that really started to impress me. I think Jack Brunel's doing a great job. So come World Cup, France will get to semis. South Africa will get to semis. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see the Northern Hemisphere, with the exception of England, and only in a one-off Scotland, having a little bit of an upturn in form. France looking really good. We can touch on Ireland in a minute, but Wales.
Oh, sorry, Tim. Sorry, yeah. I have to interrupt you, right? Because at the start of the France game, I said two issues, and I only mentioned one. Can I tell you about the other one?
Because I've been dying to talk about this.
Right. Sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted them, but I'm going.
I'm glad you did, JB.
So the second issue, and you're going to love this. There is something which happens to rugby union journalists when France play, and it usually involves the French language, and people lose their mind because a referee doesn't speak French, and I mean lose their mind. There were some seriously high-powered journalists on Saturday morning.
I saw them as well, JB.
It is unacceptable. And they may as well do this thing, you know, when someone puts the date on the end of a sentence to make it, you know, just give it more grandeur. It is unacceptable in 2018 that a referee can't speak French. And I think you must be insane. I mean, what kind of tier one referee is going to be able to ref Fiji versus Georgia? I mean, where are you going to find that sort of high profile linguist? And then like the other part of this insane proposition. It's like, well, in that case, the ref shouldn't talk to anyone. Well, that's also nonsense, because maybe as the captain of an international rugby team, you should make it your business to learn English. Everyone speaks English. Well, most people speak English. But even more importantly, you know, people like the Civil Aviation Authority all speak, guess what? English, because it's a good way to operate. Companies, German companies like Volkswagen operate in China. And what is the common language? I'll give you a clue. It's English. Hitachi, main language, English. Honda, English. Sodexo, a French company, English. I cannot say, the only reason that they do this, right, is because they want pats on the back from other journalists saying, oh, you are so progressive. You are so thoughtful and such a great guy. But you're not. They are idiots. It is a stupid, stupid notion.
It's one thing to say, When a referee, Alain Roland, let's say, as he did, and Wayne Barnes has got pretty fluent in French, it's okay to kind of say, that's fantastic that they've made the effort, in Wayne Barnes' case, he's made the effort to develop his French throughout his rugby career. You can pat someone on the back for doing that, but to say that it's disgraceful that referees get picked for games when they can't speak French playing against France, I agree, is ridiculous. Because what happens, like in the World Cup, Russia are going to be there, and Georgia are going to be there, and Argentina are going to be there, Spanish. So where does this end?
Exactly right, mate. Exactly right. So, having a go at Angus Gardner, right? Angus Gardner lives like 6,000 miles away from France. It's not like he lives in Dover and might encounter the odd French person, or he's an Italian ref. 6,000, maybe 8,000 miles. I know, thousands of miles away. Most importantly, he knows how to apply the laws. And that's all that I really care about. And that's what everyone should really care about.
I mean, those poor French citizens that want to read their match reports have to use Google Translate instead of just reading it. I mean, it's a disgrace.
Oh, well, I mean, why aren't they using... why isn't Angus Gardner using the Maori language? Because that's the official language of New Zealand. Not only that, it's... it's borderline racist. Now, Tim, I'm going to have to go because I have just had family members walk up to me asking why I am still podcasting on holiday. So I'm going to have to leave you to it. But just to give you a flavour of what Gran Canaria is like, I've just left a bar called the Wigwam Bar, which is cultural appropriation personified. And do you know what? I love it.
JB, one more question before you go, briefly. Did you see Ross Moriarty attempting to choke out Nicolas Sanchez?
Yes, and I loved every second of it. And I thought the slow motion did it every bit of justice that it deserved.
Do you think red card?
Yeah. So in today's world, it's a red card. But do you know what? I'd do it again.
I found it really entertaining.
It's a good red card.
And I think every team needs a nasty piece of work that you would not mess with. And Ross Moriarty, at age 23, has got a long and gnarly, horrible rugby career ahead of him.
Is that all he is?
Yeah. Yeah.
What a terrifying man.
JB, go and enjoy your holiday.
Thank you very much, mate. Well, and I might be talking to you later on tonight for the Love Island pod.
Oh, yes, we may well do that. I'll catch up with you in a bit, Jay.
Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
Laters. The enigmatic Jonathan Beardmore there. I think we know who wears the trousers in his relationship. Did you just pick up on the slight noise of his wife and child in the background? How long are you going to be? And then a very hasty retreat He likes to act like he's in control and moves to the beat of his own drum, but I think we just saw it's always a little bit different. And on Father's Day as well. That's all right, it'd be no different for me either. Right, so I've got to apologise to Wales and Irish fans. It's only a... Not really apologise. I can't apologise that JB had to go and enjoy his holiday. I can apologise that there's going to be a slight delay on breaking down fully your matches. Ireland and their first win in Australia since 1979. 39 years. So I know Ireland are number two team in the world and Australia are kind of just coming back from being quite poor, but absolutely awesome for Ireland. Really, really impressive. Any win for Ireland in Australia is absolutely massive given the history there. And Ringrose back in the side made a massive difference. And Furlong, man, one of my favourite moments. David Pocock like a mollusk over the ball, like a limpet on it. And Tadhg Furlong absolutely beasting him out of a ruck was one of my favourite bits of the weekend. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into that a little bit more with Phil and hopefully JB later on in the week. And likewise for Wales, what a successful tour to Argentina this has been for Wales already. And what's so impressive about them, well, not just the skills that were on show, ridiculous basic skill levels, really, really impressive. And that's what I always remember, even when I used to go and play, like, you know, Colts rugby tours, we'd go across, or we'd play Welsh teams, or school level, you'd play a Welsh side. They always had this flair and this skill. And that's what's been lacking. And I know it's pragmatic Gatland ball, but it's so fantastic to see the shackles being let off, and all the better for it. But I think what's most pleasing for Wales, and you must be delighted as a Welsh fan, to know that you're not going to be filling any of those World Cup 2019 squad spots with filler. There's not going to be players that aren't good enough to be there, because it's looking like, from what we've seen in Argentina, there's depth in every single position and there are going to be good players left back in Wales. Really, really positive. Maybe a couple of props they could do with, but that front five in general looking a lot stronger, and the back row talent is ridiculous. I'm very envious of that. I wish Ross Moriarty hadn't opted to play for Wales. But there you go. Can't have it all. I've just depressed myself thinking about England again, so I think I'm going to go right now. Hit subscribe. We will be doing another podcast in the week. Phil will bring his expert take to proceedings. JB will probably have some more ranting and raving to do as we look ahead to next weekend's games, and we'll have the under-20s Rugby World Cup final to break down as well. So there we go, that's it for now. Hit subscribe. You may have caught that we had a special offer on Beer 52 at the start of the podcast. If you skipped past that, go back and listen, because a free case of South African beer just because you listen to us. Beer52.com/egg. All you do is pay for the postage, $2.95, and then it will be delivered to you with absolutely no obligation to continue, but we think you'll want to, because Beer 52 know how to pick a beer or two. So beer52.com/egg. Get involved and let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.